You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's special report entitled Politics, Crime, and Justice on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Randy Sutton. This report of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. As we know, the law enforcement landscape has changed dramatically in the last 7 or 8 years. The events of Ferguson, the Obama administration's weaponization against law enforcement, the basic social justice or unrest that has taken place has dramatically changed law enforcement. So when I talk about politics, crime, and justice in relation to the midterm elections, there's really a lot to talk about. Now, you know, who can forecast the future? Well, in some cases, perhaps we can. Because if we look at the past, we can examine how changes have affected the American law enforcement officer. Let's go back. If we're going to look at the future and how the elections of this midterm election is going to affect the American law enforcement officer and the people they serve, we need to learn from the past. I have to tell you that I do not consider myself a political person. When it comes to Democrat, Republican, it never even entered my mind as to voting for someone because of a label. I always believed that you vote based on the record of the individual. I still am an independent. I'm a registered independent. But I have seen since the Obama administration came into power a strong change in the way that the Democratic Party has approached law enforcement. And I find that very, very disturbing. See, I don't believe that politics should play a role in law enforcement, and yet it has affected the very lives and deaths of the American law enforcement officer in the last 7 years. Dramatically affected the all aspects of law enforcement. So I'm going to start with a historical perspective from my point of view as to when I saw changes begin. It was shortly after President Obama was elected. I was not hesitant at all when he was elected. I thought that perhaps this was going to be a change that might have a positive effect on America. But when shortly into his presidency, he came out with a mind-boggling public statement about police officers in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And what took place was police were called on a black male who was seen to be trying to break into a house. Police responded. It was a white police sergeant. And when he saw the individual, he asked him for identification. And turned out to be a Cambridge professor who was acquainted with President Obama. The Cambridge professor, instead of just showing his identification and explaining that he had locked himself out of his house, which was in fact the case, basically was uncooperative with the police sergeant, refused to identify himself, accused the sergeant of racially profiling him, and this became public. The individual was vilified with in regards to the sergeant, that is, was vilified by President Obama publicly. Now, this was a local issue, and yet President Obama felt empowered enough to address the nation, where he called the sergeant, he called him out for acting stupidly, that the police acted stupidly in this incident. Now, he wound up looking like an idiot, because when it all came down to it and the public found out what really happened, the president had to walk back his statement. In fact, he brought the Cambridge sergeant into the White House in what has famously been called the Beer Summit, and basically had to walk back his statements. But the damage was done. And the president had shown his propensity for what he truly felt about law enforcement when he made this statement. At this time, I and many, many others who were in the field, we looked at this and we said, uh-oh, I think we got problems. And problems we had. I never saw a Department of Justice that in my 34-year police career that was politicized and weaponized against American law enforcement officers as I did during the Obama administration. Eric Holder, who was chosen as his attorney general, was clearly anti-police. He initiated more investigations into police agencies, inflicted more consent decree being basically federal oversight of a law enforcement agency, than any time in history. Many of these consent decrees bankrupted police departments because they're very, very expensive to implement. When Ferguson happened, that was a changing moment in history for law enforcement. A number of events that took place historically are very much with law enforcement today as far as how police do their business. The Trayvon Martin case, a young black suspect was killed by an individual named George Zimmerman, who was part of the neighborhood watch, had seen Trayvon Martin acting suspiciously. Trayvon Martin was, in fact, a criminal. He was a burglar. He had a lengthy criminal history, even though he was a juvenile. The police department, when Zimmerman contacted the police, by the way, George Zimmerman had a carrying concealed weapons permit. When he called the police to report this young man, the police told him to back off and that they would send units. Well, Trayvon Martin actually hunted down George Zimmerman. He physically attacked him. He was smashing his head into the pavement when George Zimmerman shot and killed him. Now, this created an incredible backlash. Somehow the backlash encompassed law enforcement. Now, law enforcement had nothing to do with this other than to investigate and determine through the standard ground law that George Zimmerman did nothing wrong. Now, did he use great judgment? I don't know. I wasn't there. But certainly, he was being beaten to death when he fired his weapon. Now, how did this civilian upon civilian shooting wind up to be part of the narrative that is against law enforcement? Somehow the media spun this in such a way that it became a hot potato, racially encompassing incident. It sucked in law enforcement and became part of the future narrative of police gunning down young black men, even though it had nothing to do with law enforcement. Fast forward to the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson. Now, once again, this was during the Obama administration. Michael Brown was a very large human being. He was a criminal. He had a violent history. He had committed a strong-arm robbery at a convenience store. And the victim, who was the store clerk, had contacted the police. Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson observed Michael Brown and a second subject walking in the middle of the roadway. He stopped these individuals as they matched the description of the robbery suspects. Michael Brown, instead of cooperating, attacked Darren Wilson. When I attacked him, actually got into the window of Darren Wilson's police car, grabbed his weapon, his handgun, and during the fight for the gun, the gun went off and hit Michael Brown with a grazing wound. He then backed out of the police car. Darren Wilson went to arrest him, and instead of cooperating, charged Darren Wilson, who opened fire and killed Michael Brown. In what I can only describe as an orgy of politics, the media descended upon Ferguson. The accomplice of Michael Brown came out with outlandish story that where he told the media that and people in the public that Michael Brown was surrendering and put his hands up and said, "Hands up, don't shoot." And that's when Darren Wilson opened fire and executed him. The media bought into this hook, line, and sinker, began repeating the hands up, shoot narrative in a manner that I can only say was designed purposefully to create an incredible amount of hatred and distrust about this shooting, and caused a racial narrative that is haunted law enforcement to this day. The fact that it never happened ever seemed to enter into anyone's point of view. Now, why is this part of today's discussion on politics, crime, and justice? Because many of the politicians that were serving in Congress then are serving in Congress now, and same thing with the Senate. And many of these politicians, they fell into this narrative and began efforts against the American law enforcement profession is that I would never have believed. In fact, they, many of the Congress people and senators, started putting hands up, don't shoot during Congress. And some of these people are still in Congress today and have been reelected. The narrative of hands up, shoot never took place. The riots that happened, which caused injuries, deaths, shootings of both civilians and police, never should have happened. But a complicit media, joining with the Black Lives Matter narratives, and then fueled by politicians who literally made their political careers based on these lies, is continuing to this day. And this political firestorm has severely affected law enforcement all over this country in ways that are having a detrimental effect on the American public. Now, when I say that, Let me explain. Since the events of Ferguson, policing has changed dramatically. We have seen a major diminishment of active law enforcement proactivity. It's called depolicing. It's called the Ferguson effect. But in essence, what it has done, it has taken the initiative away from law enforcement officers actively stopping people, both in vehicle stops, pedestrian stops, in order to proactively look for criminal activity. Now, why is this so important? Because when police comes reactive, when police officers only answer their 911 calls or calls for service, that is reactivity. That is not proactivity. But crimes are solved in proactivity. As a law enforcement officer myself, I can tell you that it's a number. The more people that you stop for legitimate reasons, that is, they may not be for major crimes, but anytime that you initiate an interview with either a motorist or a pedestrian, you are creating an ability to solve a crime. How? Let me give you, for instance, one of the most significant arrests that I made as a small town police officer in New Jersey was based on a stop that I made for no taillight. I saw a car in the early morning hours with no taillight, and it was cruising through the parking lot of a closed high school. I initiated a traffic stop because of that very, very minor violation. And when I did so, as I was interviewing the driver and getting his license and registration, I saw the butt of a gun sticking out from under the seat. I removed him from the car, took the gun, found that it was stolen, arrested him for that, and then searched the car. And when I searched the car, I found bomb-making devices and bombs and other devices that were used for, in explosives, and wound up solving a number of bombings, all because of a taillight out. Now, why is that significant? Because police officers around the country are trained to do proactive policing and creating that game in order to solve crimes. What the Ferguson effect is, and depolicing, is it takes that initiative away from law enforcement. Why? Because every stop that they make now becomes a potential encounter with politics. Every single stop they make could become a confrontation which turns physical, which turns deadly. And if they believe, if these officers believe that the because of the political environment, they may face persecution and prosecution, they are going to be less likely to conduct proactive stops. And that is exactly what is happening today. And after we take a quick break, we're going to talk about politics, crime, and justice. Those of you who have followed me for any length of time know that in addition to being a 33-year law enforcement officer, I'm also an author. I've written 4 books, The True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, A Cop's Life, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and my latest book, which was actually just released only a couple weeks ago, is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. It's a much different book than what I've written before, but it is truly an inspirational book because I had traveled the country talking to people who have done amazing things with their lives, people like Frank Shankwitz, who, when he was an Arizona State Trooper, created the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Gary Sinise, who's done amazing things for military and law enforcement, and a number of people, some names you know, some names you don't, but this book is full of inspiration. Changed my life doing this book. Now, here's something I'm going to share with you. You know, I have a lot of Facebook followers, you know, more than 25,000 of them. but Facebook is not allowing me to share the message of my book. I think they call it shadow banning, and it's very, very disturbing. So I'm going to ask your help. First of all, I would love for you to go to Amazon.com. It's available on Kindle. It's available on audiobook, and of course in hardcover and softcover. I would love for you to pick up a copy of this book, share it with your children, because it is full of inspiration about how everyone can become a personal hero. But I'd also ask you to share this information with your friends on Facebook and other social media, because I'm fighting an uphill battle. Shadow banning is a real thing. I go to share it with my followers, and it keeps on getting unapproved, saying it's too political. There's nothing political about this book. It's about good people. I'd ask for you to share this message. I need your help to get this message out, because this book can change the world. When you talk about becoming a personal hero, you change the life of one person. You add to that person's life, and you change the world. So if you would, check me out on Amazon.com. All my books are available there. But The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And I appreciate your support. For those of you who are involved in investigative work, there is an amazing software that you've got to take a look at, from Blue Light LLC. And Blue Light is a company owned by a retired Special Forces Sergeant Major. He is a strong supporter of law enforcement. And this software is amazing. It is incredible for conspiracy investigations, narcotics investigations, homicide. It's called Analyst Notebook. And it's a product that has been used very, very successfully in bringing down a lot of bad guys. The reason the Special Forces Sergeant Major got involved in it is because he used to use it in the Middle East for discovering IED, improvised explosive devices, originators, and their networks. But it's great for civilian police work. So check it out, Blue Light LLC, it's Analyst Notebook, and it is an amazing product. Check it out.
America Out Loud is a groundbreaking news and lifestyle platform requiring top-tier analysts, strategic thinkers, and impressive commentators. I'd like you to meet Colonel Jim Warshug. He's retired from United States Air Force. He is a career senior intelligence and special missions officer. He's a columnist and commentator. All back at America Out Loud. Colonel Warshug, what is the state of our military today?
We are in a strategic rebuilding, and we are going to reprogram and reprioritize our mission, our capability, our training, and what we need to do to keep America secure and safe.
How can America Out Loud support not only the military, but peace around the world?
I think the best thing we can do, certainly for our listeners and for Americans, is to make sure truth is paramount in every single aspect of commentary, in writings, in whatever it is that America Out Loud provides to its listeners and Americans. That is absolutely key. If we don't provide that, then we're really not providing a service to anyone. We're just another news organization, and we actually become just part of the mainstream media. We've got to be above that each and every day.
Our goal is simple. It's to deliver an honest analysis and diverse opinions to keep you informed, all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back to this special report, Politics, Crime, and Justice. We were talking about depolicing, and we were talking about the effect on the American law enforcement officer. The political environment has been changing since the Obama administration and the events of Ferguson, two watershed moments in law enforcement history. Now, what can we learn from this past as it affects law enforcement today, considering the new midterm elections? What happened during this season that is going to have a tremendous effect on law enforcement? I think that there's a couple things. On a local level, I want to talk about something that is that resulted from the election that is going to have a dramatic effect on not only local officers, but we might see this on a national basis as well. One of the initiatives that passed as a result of this election is something that took place in Washington State, and that is what is being referred to as Initiative 940. Now, what is Initiative 940 in the state of Washington? And the reality is that it passed with by a wide margin. And really, what it has done, it has changed the law in the state of Washington, making it easier to prosecute a police officer who was involved in a deadly force incident. There was a law on the books that gave law enforcement the benefit of the doubt, if you will, in a deadly force incident, by saying that if you were going to prosecute a police officer for shooting, there had to be malice involved. So, in other words, if a police officer shoots someone, which is part of the law enforcement job, unfortunately, if you couldn't prove malice, that is, some evil intent, then you can't prosecute that officer. This gave a tremendous protection to law enforcement. Well, that has been now stripped away from them. And now it is the reasonableness factor. So what does this mean in reality? It means that the new mindset of prosecutors and politicians in the state of Washington now have a much greater, a larger avenue, if you will, to prosecute law enforcement officers who use deadly force. Now, this has a national nexus in that we are seeing persecution by prosecution, law enforcement officers who are forced to use deadly force all over this country. It used to be very, very rare when a law enforcement officer was prosecuted for being involved in a shooting situation, because the reality is the police who are forced to use deadly force decisions make these decisions sometimes in milliseconds. And they're given a little leeway in making these decisions because they are often under very adverse circumstances. But what has been happening nationally is politicians have entered into the fray of these shootings and used political power and pressure to force prosecutions. And this has a dramatic effect on law enforcement officers all over this country. Now, let me give you an example that of the politics involved here. There was an officer-involved shooting in Virginia. Now, here's the circumstances. It was in Portsmouth. A police officer shot an armed burglary suspect. Okay, so the police get called. There's a burglary in progress. The off spots the suspect. The suspect has a gun in his hand, waves it in the direction of the police officer. He then flees, and the police officer shoots him. Does not kill him, but shoots him. He stops the threat. The suspect is armed. They recover the firearm. And that police officer is awarded a medal in recognition of his heroic service. The Medal of Valor Commendation says, "You took necessary steps to stop the threat that this suspect posed to the public and to your fellow officers at great personal risk." So this officer was given the valor. He was then charged with two felony counts of aggravated malicious wounding and a firearms charge by the district attorney. This is persecution by prosecution. This is what has been happening when politics gets involved with law enforcement. Now, let's go back to what I was talking about in Washington. This new law has now stripped away some of the protections that were given to the police. Thereby, we're talking about a state which has seen incredible political issues involving law enforcement, political issues that are not good for law enforcement. That is, by basically emasculating police officers in Seattle. They have been ordered to stand down during confrontations. Why? Because of the political environment. So now we have an environment that makes it easier to prosecute a police officer who's forced to use deadly force. This is going to have a tremendous effect on policing in Washington. The Virginia case is just one of a number of persecutions and prosecutions. You don't have to look very far as to look at some of the high-profile persecutions. You look at Marilyn Mosby, who was the state's attorney in Baltimore, when she moved to arrest and prosecute six police officers for the death of Freddie Gray, a prisoner who had been resisting arrest and died in custody. All of those officers were found not guilty during trial. There was the prosecution of Hoppy Hopkins, who was a high-profile deputy. He was found originally during the investigation by the district attorney and by the police department that he served, the sheriffs that he served, during a deadly force incident, to have acted properly. A new district attorney came in, different political party, different political leanings, and a year and a half, 2 years later, he arrests Hoppy Hopkins for murder and brings to trial, ruining this officer's life. And the officer is found not guilty in a space of literally minutes, because this was a politically motivated prosecution. So now we look at the midterm elections and we see that there have been some of the same people who bought into the hands up, don't shoot narrative, the lies, who were vigilant in their anti-law enforcement speech, and now they are in positions of power in the majority, which is the House that that has now taken over the majority in the United States government. When we look at the political landscape, we are seeing more and more anti-law enforcement laws being passed. We are seeing more and more politically based prosecutions take place. And we are then seeing the result of that, which is the Fergus Act or depolicing. Why is this such an important topic? Because the very safety of our nation's law enforcement officers and the safety of the people that they serve is on the block here. You see, if the police are afraid to act because of political interference, which may very possibly affect their lives dramatically by leaving them open to criminal prosecution for decisions that they make, which they make in the blink of an eye in good faith, you are going to find fewer officers, A, willing to take the job to begin with, B, staying in the job till they reach their retirement age. And this is what we're seeing around the country. So if we see less people joining the police departments or law enforcement agencies, then we see more people leaving prematurely. The attrition that is taking place across America will have a severe effect on fielding enough police officers to protect the communities. This, we were already seeing this. This is taking place. This is reality right now. Now, how are our police agencies and cities dealing with it? Well, unfortunately, the way they're dealing with it in many circumstances is they are lowering the standards for hiring. That's right. So on one hand, these political movements to prosecute law enforcement is based on their training, their experience, and instead of creating an environment where we are giving these officers training and the backing they need, just the opposite is taking place. This is where we are going to see, and we are seeing, a dramatic effect to law enforcement. And when you diminish the hiring requirements, let me give you, for instance, this is going to blow your mind. Because of the politics, I won't mention the city because there's litigation going on, but a mayor ordered the police department to hire a number of recruits for the next academy class without a background investigation. This is unheard of. They actually ordered the police to hire a bunch of, say there were 75 police recruits to go through academy training and become police officers. And out of those 75 hired, less than half could pass the academy. And then those that did pass the academy, at that time, they did background checks. Well, half of them were wanted. They actually had felony arrest warrants for them. So what does that say about who we're now hire to become cops? Here's the incongruity. Because of political interference, because of laws being passed, rules being foisted upon police agencies based on politics, not based on good, sound policy, agencies are hiring people who should not be cops. And if we don't learn from history, we're fools, and we're not learning from history. In the early 80s, because of politics and a huge influx of Hispanic into the Miami-Dade area, the mayor and the city council ordered the standards to be dropped in order to hire a large amount of Hispanic police officers. They wanted it to reflect, if you will, I think this we've heard over and over again, the nature of the community. So a bunch of police officers were hired with lower standards, with poor background checks, and it began one of the darkest historical aspects of the Miami-Dade Police Department, because a lot of these officers became involved in criminal activity, including drug trafficking and murder. After a number of high-profile arrests of a criminal gang operating within the Miami-Dade Police Department, it led to the change where the standards were once again changed to the point where you had to pass rigorous background checks and physical and written exams. That's the way it should be. But as we are now seeing, once again, this cycle changed because of politics. We are seeing the diminishment of police standards. We are seeing the lessening of these standards. In fact, under the Obama administration, his Department of Justice tried to force police agencies to hire felons, hire people convicted of felony crimes and other crimes. And why? Because of politics. I am deeply afraid that the political environment is changing to the point where law enforcement is going to pass a point of no return, where we are going to see thousands of police officers become hired who should not be given that position. I am afraid we're seeing, and we're going to see, these officers then commit acts. We're going to denigrate more law enforcement officers and agencies. So instead of doing what should be done, and is raising the standards and raising the number of recruiting issues to bring people into the profession who are legitimately qualified, we're doing just the opposite. You know, when the military became all volunteer, the Army and the Navy and the Air Force were all vying for recruits, and what they were doing was touting the benefits, college education, pay increases, etc. But one branch of service did just the opposite. The Marines, instead of reaching a far-reaching net, they decided that they were going to pinpoint the people that they wanted, and they began one of the most effective recruiting campaigns in history. The few, the proud, the Marines. I submit to you that now is the time for law enforcement to do exactly the same thing. It's time to toss aside the political correctness. It is time to put back into place a stringent set of requirements to take the job of a law enforcement officer. This is how we will preserve justice. This is how we will preserve the ethics and the honor that law enforcement officers must possess if they are to be effective. By doing so, we will put the pride back into policing. See, I believe in unity. I believe the American public and the American police need to join together as one. Because if you look back at the historical advent of modern policing, Sir Robert Peel said it best. The people are the police, and the police are the people. What that means is that the police cannot do it alone. They must act together with the people that they serve. That means that the public must believe in their cops. They must believe in their system of law. They must believe that the men and women who serve do so out of a sense of pride, out of a sense of commitment, and the vast majority do. But we have to give them the tools. We have to give them the training. We have to give them the methodology of hiring the best people for the job. Not lowering the standards, but raising the standards. It is only through that that we will be able to combat politics. It is only through understanding what the law enforcement profession really deals with, the American public can believe in their cops and take what has become a system geared against law enforcement and make it once again geared towards a profession that is deeply proud, that is built on honor and believed to be, by those who serve, a profession that will touch the lives of Americans in the near future and the far future. If you're a police officer, or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, and that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it. And this is really good stuff. You don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of odors, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And it's only available at StinkyVest.com. Go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com. See their products, and it is worthwhile. For those of you who have been following my Facebook page and listening to my radio show, seeing me on television, you probably know this already, but if you don't, I have a number of books that are on Amazon.com. The last one was just released about a month and a half ago. It's called The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. My other three books were all law enforcement related. This one is not. It's about real heroes, people who have done amazing things in their lives, where I actually asked them who it was in their life that inspired them. And there are some truly inspirational stories in this. People who have risen above incredible trauma to go on and live incredible lives. Please take a look. Go to Amazon.com, check it out, or go to my website, RandySuttonSpeaks.com. And by the way, I'm also available for keynote addresses and inspirational speaking at your conference. So check it out, RandySuttonSpeaks.com, or check out the books at Amazon.com.
To be recognized as a groundbreaking news and lifestyle platform, an alternative news source requires top-tier analysts, strategic thinkers, and impressive commentators. I'd like you to meet Ilana Friedman. She's a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst, a columnist, and commentator on America Out Loud. Ilana, when it comes to intelligence gathering and the NSA, the idea of spying on Americans stateside, have they crossed the line?
They crossed the line a long time ago. Unfortunately, they have taken so many liberties that I would say that they have probably, it's not clear, but they have probably broken a number of laws in collecting information and intelligence from American citizens and using it against them.
How can America Out Loud bridge the gap and bring back trust to the people we serve?
Malcolm, you are already doing a great job in providing your listeners with informed and diverse opinions on very, very important topics that give your listeners the opportunity to inform themselves and make their own minds up about how they feel about important issues and then bring them back to their own communities where they can act accordingly.
Our goal is simple. It's to deliver an honest analysis and diverse opinions to keep you informed. Back at AmericaOutLoud.com. International news, world events, or an improved lifestyle. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
End of watch with Randy Sutton.
Even though this is a special report, one of the things that is so important in this radio broadcast is honoring those men and women of the profession who have given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, this week I have two names to read. Deputy Sheriff Lauren Vasquez of the Waller County Sheriff's Office in Texas. Deputy Sheriff Lauren Vasquez was drowned after her patrol car was caught in floodwaters near the intersection of FM 362 and Hoover Lane. She was responding to investigate reports of high water when her patrol car was swept into a water-filled ditch and overturned. After considerable effort, other deputies were able to remove her from the vehicle. She was transported to Memorial Hermann Hospital, Cypress, where she was pronounced dead. Deputy Vasquez has served with the Waller County Sheriff's Office for only 5 months and was on her third shift after completing field training. Deputy Sheriff Lauren Vasquez, Waller County Sheriff's Office, Texas. End of watch, Wednesday, October 31st, 2018. The second is Corporal Travis Wells of the Dallas Police Department in North Carolina. Corporal Travis Wells killed in a vehicle crash in the 300 block of the Dallas-Bessemer City Highway at 10 a.m. His patrol car left the roadway and struck a tree, causing him to suffer fatal injury. Corporal Wells had served with the Dallas Police Department for 22 years. He survived by his wife. Corporal Travis Wells, Dallas Police Department, North Carolina. End of watch Thursday, November 1st, 2018. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for tuning in this week to this special episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Politics, crime, and justice. It's going to be a challenging few years for American law enforcement officer and the people that they serve. Thank you once again for tuning in to Blue Lives Radio. Take care.